Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. I'm very excited this morning to share with you. Well, it's this morning here in California, 11 a.m. Those of you on the East Coast, of course, it's afternoon already, and those of you in Europe and other parts of the world, it's different times. Diane McBain is an actress that I've long admired. I've seen her on Batman and an Elvis film that I enjoy, Spin Out. And she's accomplished a wonderful artistic goal here of putting out her first novel. It's called The Laughing Bear. And you writers and fans of fiction, it's a tremendous character-driven story. And she's going to discuss her novel with us. And I look forward to that. So spread the link, and we'll be right back with all of you to learn about this novel, The Laughing Bear, with the lovely actress Diane McBain. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in about 30 seconds. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. And one of the wonderful things that I've been able to do during this sequestered time has been to read more, and I love to read. Some of you know I'm a voracious reader. I got in trouble in the Studio City branch library here because you're only allowed to check out 30 books at a time, and I would do my best to charm librarians into letting me check out more than that, and I got caught by the head librarian, and then I had to win her over, and now she'll sneak me some more books. And I just read this novel, The Laughing Bear, by actress Diane McBain, and it's a wonderful story. Recently, we were watching an Elvis film that she's in. It's called Spin Out. Elvis has three women that he's after in the film, Diane, and I think it was Shelley Fabre and Deborah Wally. But this is a lovely love song that Elvis sang to Diane. My son and I, as you know, are guitarists, singer-songwriters, and we found this to be right up there with some of his other great love songs. Is a beautiful song. It's up there with, like, Love Me Tender or Can't Help Falling in Love. It's a beautiful song. She was the muse that he sings this to. I'll give you a little listen to it in a few moments.
All that I am,
gorgeous. What a song, huh? Well, Diane left Hollywood and had a goal to write a novel, and it's been worth the wait. It's a beautiful, beautiful novel. And so without further ado, let's press the right buttons here and get over to line two. And hopefully you can hear me and I can hear you, Diane. Welcome to the show, Diane.
Oh, I can hear you. I have been listening all along. Thank you very much, Richard, I am delighted to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you. I've admired you as an actress for many years and seen you in different shows. I was one of those baby boom kids that loved Batman and rushed out and got a Batman suit, and you always stuck in my mind for your appearance on Batman also.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed doing Batman an awful lot, primarily because Van Williams played the Green Hornet.
Yes.
And in that particular show was a combination between Batman and the Green Hornet. They were solving the mystery together.
Yes, I have to tell you that was lit up the buzz in my Pittsburgh neighborhood. And I saw in the back of your novel, The Laughing Bear, by the way, everyone, it's out on Amazon, an e-book and hard copy. I actually got a hard copy. I'm kind of old school today, and I wanted to hold a hard copy of this book in my hand. I have it in my hand as we speak. But I notice it says in your blurb in the back that you were born in Cleveland. I grew up in Pittsburgh, about a 90-minute drive from there. And when you were on the Green Hornet Batman episode, I can tell you that my friends and I, in our little neighborhood of Pittsburgh, us boys, we were, oh my God, Green Hornet and Batman together. Oh, it was like so exciting to have these two combined. So that was quite an episode.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. I so enjoyed doing it. I had to, of course, put on a pink wig and the pink clothes, and I had two pink dogs that played the part of one dog, because I always use two to play one. But it was a lot of fun. We just had a good time with it, especially with Van, because, you know, Van and I did the series Surfside 6 years before that. And so we were all very good old friends.
Yes, and you and I are Facebook friends, and I saw some pictures you posted recently of you and Van at the beach that were just beautiful pictures, two beautiful people. And I know it was for publicity, but it sure sold me of a beautiful couple. So
yeah.
The mission was accomplished.
It was meant to. It was meant to, but, you know, I had to just, you know, say that that he was married at the time. And I would never have tried to encroach on that marriage.
Yes, well, his wife had some understanding on that point, as actors' wives have to. And I tell you, I really enjoyed reading The Laughing Bear, this book. Now, in your foreword, you say something really interesting. And by the way, everyone, The Laughing Bear, Diamond Bane, is on Amazon and wherever books are sold, Diane McBain, The Laughing Bear. In your foreword, I can read this to our listeners. At some point, I took up my computer. I began writing stories that seemed fascinating, again, using templates. These templates were the people and places I had come to know, some very intimately and others more casually. The story of The Laughing Bear emerged from this endeavor, the templates finding their own textures, colors, and images, which eventually became a novel I thought I could be proud of. Now, As a writer-actor myself, I feel like it's sacred, you know, how much is personal or how much isn't, or if someone asks an actor, what substitution from your personal life were you using to get to that emotion? I think that's like encroaching on a private thing. But you hint at, I was curious in this forward, you hint at perhaps this creative work started with people you know or things, maybe journaling about your life, and then it morphed or modified into fiction. I think you made the comment elsewhere in the book that by the end of it, they were far from the reality. But that's a really interesting process. So did it kind of start journaling from real life and things you observed? Because your characters in your book are so grounded in a feeling of reality. And I like character-driven films. I like character-driven books. And everything feels so real. And I wondered what your writing process was to get that.
Well, you're absolutely right. It did come from my journalizing relationships and friends, and I combined a lot of those people into single characters so that no one would think that they were the only person.
person. We have a lot of writers that like the show, so there's a tip for you writers. It's called a composite character, so you can combine. I did that. I did a coming of age novel, Stickman, and my best friend in the novel is a composite of just about every boyhood friend or sibling, you know, thrown into that. But a friend of mine on my most recent novel caught me and said, you know, your person that inspired this particular character, the name's is too close to the real person. I'm really worried about you getting in trouble. But I think you as this thing went along, it became more towards fiction, even though it started in reality. I think that makes your writing really good. Is the fact, Diane, that you have such a sense of reality and truth in these characters?
Well, thank you. I'm very complimented by that. I'm not really surprised, though, because they did come out of some very real people and very real situations. So, you know, even though they were combined and no one particular person was the sole owner of that particular character, The realities of those people's lives were what I drew from. And I've known some very fascinating people, But, you know, then again, it got, you know, to be just out of my imagination, because certainly the ending is not anything that was real.
Yes.
And you know, Danny passes away at the end, so.
Yes, and you write it so beautifully. And I guess, spoiler alert, turn down your volume if you don't want to have the ending. Spoiler alert for a minute, turn down your volume.
Yeah, well, it's just a moment in time, though.
Yeah. It's so beautiful the way you describe it. You write, the child, Grammy, the child thought her Grammy had fallen asleep.
Yeah.
It was so unexpected, she felt startled and ran into the house. And you said she took her last breath, collapsed in the chair, the teacup fell from her lap. Very excellent writing. And this character, the main character, Danny or Daniela Wharton, is a retired movie star. Quite close to... I guess how people see and perceive you in certain ways. And you and Michael wrote a beautiful, beautiful memoir. Let's plug the memoir. Can you just tell us about the memoir? People might want to also read that for background on you.
Sure. I'd love for people to read it. I think it's pretty good. It's called Famous Enough, a Hollywood Memoir. And it's by me, Diane, of course. And I had a partner on that book. His name is Michael Michaud. And he is a person who has really supported me tremendously in the last several years. And he had written a wonderful book on Sal Mineo. I think the best book that has been written on Sal Mineo.
Yeah.
And he was doing really well with it. And he called me up in the middle of that and said, you know, I want to follow up this book with something so that I can get that published too. You know, would you mind being a partner and we could, you know, finish your novel, not novel, but your memoir, if you would like my help? And I said, oh, absolutely, I really could use the help, because I, you know, was sort of stuck in the middle of it. And there was a lot that I remembered, a lot, but there was a lot that I didn't remember. Details, little things career-wise that I just, you know, had slipped my mind, because I had done so much in the early days. They just ran into one another after a while, and it was hard for me to tell the difference between one show and another. So he added the context of all of those shows, and he made it much broader and more knowledgeable about my actual career. Not my personal life, because he wasn't involved in that, but I was the one who wrote about all the personal things. But he really broadened the information about my my professional life, and he did a lot of editing on it. So he really did a fabulous job. And he was the one who got it published. I would never have known what to do after I got it finished. I would never have known how to get that done, but he did. And he was the one who got it published. So I'm very grateful to him.
Yay,
it's,
Michael.
It's a
big
very,
shout out to you, Michael. Michael Michaud. And
yes, big shout out
many
to Michael
great
Michaud.
Stuff
about, yeah,
and he has
and,
a new
and,
book coming
and
out, which
I want
we hope
to say
to
that I think that the memoir is a pretty good one. I was as honest as I could possibly be about my life as an actress, and into my personal life as well, because I didn't want people to have pie in the sky idea of my life in Hollywood, because it wasn't that. It was, you know, a lot of work, and it was a lot of great things too, but it was a lot of work and then a lot of heartbreak too. So.
Yes. And in the novel, The Laughing Bear, the main character, Danny, also writes a memoir and is complimented by the people at the inn, the Laughing Bear Inn, about how honest she is. So there's those parallels. And then Danny, like we could talk about the characters. Danny in the novel has a son, Wally, who's quite an interesting character, a conspiracy theorist, believes all the conspiracy theories on the Internet. I have some relatives and friends that all fall into that category. So I was like Danny. I'm the one that tries to get them to, hey, you know, why don't you put these claims in Google and see if it's backed up by any credible sources other than this wacky propaganda website. So we all have a Wally in our lives that believes in the, you know, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Illuminati and all that stuff.
It is a widespread kind of movement, actually, at this point. And now they call themselves QAnon, which is just horrifying.
Yes, and even the president was asked about QAnon the other day, so they're getting more known. And so talk about Danny and Wally. These are the mother, the retired movie star, her son Wally, who's struggled with addiction, conspiracy theories. He has an on-again, off-again girlfriend in the story, Sally Oliver. Talk about some of these characters for our readers to get an idea about who they'll be meeting when they get The Laughing Bear to read.
Well, as you have said, Wally is the son of a movie star, which is a bad situation to be in. It just is. How either a boy or a girl, how do you manage a life as the child of somebody who's well known like that? And it's a very difficult thing. And then he's also the son of a divorced couple. His father, who kind of pretty much ignored him throughout his young life. And so all of the things that happened to him in his current life are really a reflection of all the things that happened in his childhood. And he was with a woman, and they broke up because of the interference of a man who came into town on his Harley and with methamphetamines in his pocket and grabs her up and runs off with her and just leaves poor Wally in a terrible state. And he dives into the awful world of methamphetamines as a result. And it's his struggle to get out of that and then to form relationships after that as well, because in a small town, and this happens in a very small village in the mountains, you know, people get their opinion about you and they don't give it up easily. It's a real struggle for people to overcome a bad reputation. And he gets a bad reputation while he's on the meth. And so he has to struggle against that. And he does have a girlfriend, Sally Oliver, who is a real character, I think. I really love her as a character myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, I loved all of my characters. But I thought she was quite unique in her honesty and her forthrightness. And you know, she's just a very open, honest woman who loves sex, and and he really, you know, he gets tangled up with her to the extent that things do progress in the novel. I'm not going to give the whole story away, but his struggle with his mother is his biggest struggle, because she was a movie star. She didn't handle things really well. She had made a bad time of it for herself, not only with breaking up marriages and things like that, but she also was never very good at investing, and she never really managed to do the things that she really should have done to make a good life for him. And there was a lot, you know, that came in there. There's a previous child that was adopted out because she didn't have the time nor the means to take care of that child. So, and he doesn't know about that child until the very end. So that all figures into his real trauma and why he becomes the person he becomes. He's mainly, in the beginning, he's a homeless bum, really. And she tries to help him out, but boy, you know, he's a tough kid to help out.
It's a struggle between the two of them. Yes, all of us parents relate to this dynamic with you and the character you created, Danny and Wally. I love how it's interesting, Diane, in your writing, how each chapter shifts to a different character. That was a wonderful idea. You know, you start off, I think Wally's the first one, and then we kind of get his point of view in a car with a bear licking his feet up in the mountain. Then chapter two is Danny. We get to know her. I love this shifting back and forth between characters. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, you know, I being a new novelist, the first one, I really didn't know how to combine the narrative so that characters could speak from their point of view. So I just decided to split them all up and just make those main characters, those four characters. There's, Wally, Danny, Darwin, and Rose.
Yeah.
And those are the four main characters, and from all of their points of view. And I just go from one chapter to the other, and it's from their point of view per chapter. And I thought it came out pretty clearly, and I kind of like the form.
It kept me engaged in Darwin and Rose, for those of you getting the book, The Laughing Bear. It'll help you reading this to know these four main characters. Darwin and Rose run an inn. I think it's called The Laughing Bear Bed and Breakfast. And Danny needs a place to stay and rents a room. And her beauty is a bit threatening, I think, to Rose as I read it, because she's a bit of a, I'd say maybe like OCD perfectionist, a little bit critical of her husband. And she gets insecure about Danny's beauty. And, you know, Darwin and Danny have a kind of a click and a friendship. And Rose is quite threatened by her beauty and, you know, she might steal my husband kind of a thing, huh?
Yes, and she reads Danny's book, and she knows that Danny is a homewrecker. So she worries that that Danny's going to wreck her home. Yeah.
Well, it's great. You know, this is so cinematic for, like, an independent film or a character-driven type of film that you'd see, like, at the Lemley. And as a former actress, are you open, or would you like to see it as a film? And if so, could you see yourself playing Danny, or would you rather have another actress play the part?
Oh, well, I would love to see it as a film. I think that would be just great fun. And but I would like to have someone else play the role. I've even looked at various actresses from time to time, just out of my fantasy of seeing it cinematically. And
Can you tell me any of them? Because I see this as a film, and I want to pray and think on that. So tell me who would play Danny.
Well, I have quite a few in mind, and I can't think of all their names offhand, but Bette Midler is one of them. And she has that kind of a hearty kind of personality.
Yeah.
And I sort of picture Danny as being a hearty soul. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I would like to that just one person that might have been able to play the part of Danny. And an elder, I mean, she is 75 years old, so it would be Bette Midler as a 75-year-old. And I think she's probably would fit that part about now. I'm not sure.
Yeah. She's quite
but
versatile and a very talented singer and actress.
Yes.
That's a good point. I lose track of time, but yeah, you're right. She's 74 now.
She is. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
well, she's perfect.
74 now. Wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, that's great. I think, you know, the thing about that attracts me to this, like as a filmic cinematic story, is having made, you know, a few feature dramatic films. These hardware movies, you know, where you're blowing things up and all kind of explosions for, like, people that are, like, ADD and you know, since MTV with the quick cutting, you have to have – it's almost like if you don't have some explosion, they'll be looking at their phone and not watching the film. That's not my type of film. I like films like this where the people and the characters pull you in. But making something like this, as you know, as an actress, would be so much easier than that kind of mega budget thing, because you just need, you know, four strong lead actors and and some character actors for the other parts, like you have Samantha and Eugenia, some of these other characters. But the thing about it is the four actors would carry this thing, and you just need a set for an inn and maybe shoot it up there in that area of California. I think it would be a beautiful art film.
Thank you.
Because you've written it so well. You've written the characters so well. I mean, you have so much nuance. You know, you show the good and bad of these different characters so well.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very complimented by that. It makes me feel very good. Thank you.
Yes, yes.
Well, I certainly hope that people will go out and buy it and read it. I'm not so much interested in making a lot of money. I really can't use the money. But I do want to people to read it, and I want to be able to continue my career as a novelist. I've always dreamed of having a career as a novelist, and starting at this late date, it makes me feel really good.
I love the
feel
fact
like
that
I've accomplished
a career
something.
And doing it, and that there's more to come. My acting teacher out here years ago, Milton Casales, had once told me that the word career comes from a boat and the course of a boat sailing the sea. And it's like a new course for that ship. And so this is wonderful. You have this new direction, this new course for your ship. Now, when you talk about career, I don't know if it's premature, because I almost feel like I'm talking to a woman that just gave birth, and I'm like, when do you want to have another baby? But when you say career, it makes me interested if you have any ideas brewing for another novel of what's next, or is it a little premature to ask that?
No, it isn't too premature, although I'm in the middle of writing another novel.
Yay!
Oh,
that makes me excited. You're already started.
Yes, and in fact, I've gotten pretty far into it. There's a lot to be done with it, though. I'm not quite secure yet about how it is working. Like you said in The Laughing Bear, the character is so well drawn and so on. And I really, this one is much more difficult for me because I'm way out of my comfort zone. I'm writing about people that I have maybe never met in my life, if at all, very briefly, and maybe not even known that they were the way they were. But this is about a black woman, a young black woman who is, you know, her nursing education is interrupted, and she has to go to work as a caretaker for an old white man. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that he is quite a white supremacist. And uh-oh. So, I mean, I've never met a white supremacist as far as I know, and I certainly don't know a lot of black people, although I have met some. But I can't, you know, I'm far from qualified to be writing about any of these characters. But I'm doing my very best to do in-depth research and reading as much as I possibly can about black people and white supremacists. There are other characters, of course, in the book. It's not just them, but that's the focal point. Those are the two main characters, and the climax involves their conflict. And so, but it's I think it's going to be a wonderful story once I get it all settled and really flesh out all of the characters as fully as I need to. So it's hard work, but
well,
I'm enjoying it.
That's a wonderful premise and so timely with everything going on.
We have
some questions coming in at the email, which is richardrossilive@gmail.com, or in our, as we're starting to run a bit out of time, if you want to call in a question, you can at 347-637-2379. So we'll be right back with you. I want to call you Danny because I'm having one of those brain farts, those dyslexic things where I call my two children by each other's names sometimes. But I'll be right back with Diane McVain talking about The Laughing Bear and Danny. And let me check your questions. By the way, this song goes out to all my friends on Frankfort Avenue in Pittsburgh growing up who were like me, loved Diane, in the Green Hornet Batman episode. And hopefully I get this to play for you, for all our friends that love Diane and that show. And we'll be right back. Live. We have some questions on Gmail coming in. Michelle in Las Vegas is interested in getting the book, and she asks about reading the blurb, the main character goes through trauma similar to Diane. Was that difficult? I don't want to ask anything insensitive or indelicate. You don't have to answer that, Diane, but I know I don't want to trigger any kind of PTSD if you want to skip that one, but there's some trauma that your character in the novel goes through similar to what you went through. Is that something you want to address, or would you rather just have them read that, Diane?
Well, of course, I would love for them to read the book, but exactly what was the question? I didn't quite get that.
Oh, Michelle in Las Vegas said that the main character in your book goes through some trauma similar to what she read you went through in your life, and if that was difficult to write about. And again, I don't want to be indelicate, Diane, if you'd rather not discuss that.
No, it's okay. I'm 79 years old now, and I'm pretty mature. And that pretty much means that I have resolved most of the most horrible issues of my life. Of course, it's always difficult to write about these things, whether I'm writing about them from my personal point of view or even about others. I do cry a lot of tears in my life, but most of my tears are for other people's pain. I don't know why that is, but I do. I feel other people's pain very deeply. And the pain of rape, and I'm assuming that's what she's talking about.
Yeah.
Yes. Myself and the character of Danny do have that experience. And of course, it's always painful to have to write about those things. But it isn't just a personal pain. It's also the kind of pain that I experience whenever I write something difficult about anyone at all. Because pain is pain. And as human beings, we all feel it. So anyway, that's all I have to say really about that.
That's excellent. That's excellent. And those of you asking about that, if you've been through something like that, there's resources and talking to a counselor. And I think externalizing those kind of traumas, those of us that have had abuse in our background, I think externalizing and talking about it is very healthy and helpful. And maybe, who knows, mm-hmm. maybe some of you out there like Diane, writing about these things would be a great therapy for you as well.
Yes. I highly recommend it.
Writing is wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, this
yes.
book has a great spiritual quality to it. You have a lot of, you know, it's not in any way preachy or anything, but I love your discussion that comes up about religion. Like there's one conversation with Sally, who Wally, the son of Danny and Sally, I think, are talking about religion, if I'm remembering right. Sally says she's a Christian, but so much of Christianity doesn't care about the poor and the disenfranchised and the hurting the way they're supposed to. And I mean, there's a lot of wonderful kind of nuggets in this book about, you know, all those things that are out there, the conspiracy theory discussions with Danny and her son. You the book just is so rooted in the kind of stuff we're all seeing and hearing about, you know, because every crazy theory out there pops up on Facebook nowadays. And I love how your characters get into real discussions about real things like that. You take the time to do that so well in your writing.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for saying that. And I also included the current political situation as a sort of thread throughout the novel that culminates at the very end. And anyway, that's just in addition to what you were just saying. Yeah.
Yes, I love the cute little discussion, and you even have it in the child's voice at the end. Let me see here. I think I found it. I think it might be the last chapter, where the little black doll baby asked with great authority, "Grammy, what is election?"
Mm-hmm.
"Well, an election
is
a very grown-up thing. It means we choose who our leaders will be in the next few years." "You mean like the precedent?" And you just have this discussion. I thought it was such a cute way to introduce it, as the innocence of a child asking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I loved writing that chapter. I didn't intend it in the beginning. I was going to end it with the chapter before, but then I thought that was such a feel-good chapter that I thought, oh, I don't think that's right. I should, write something a little bit further down the line. And so it is a conversation between the now 5-year-old child and her grandmother. About politics and it's complicated. She can't really quite say this the word complicated.
Yeah.
She can only say complicated, and and her parents argue about these issues a lot, and she doesn't quite understand why they do. And her grandmother's trying to explain it to her, and it's so difficult to explain to a 5-year-old why we are the way we are. And it's difficult for me to explain it to myself. I'm not even sure myself why we are the way we are. So I enjoyed writing that chapter for that very reason. I thought it was, I liked it.
You know, that's one of the things that I love about your main character, about Danny, is so many times people in our world are so certain, and we're in this binary, I'm right and you're all wrong, or I got it all figured out. And even fiction that's not well written, to me, the characters are all good or all this. But you have a lot of nuance, like, you know, hey, this is complicated, you know. Or you have moments where Danny prays for her son Wally and says, "Heal my son," and you write something like she prayed to a god she wasn't sure existed, she hoped existed, she wasn't sure she believed in. You have that kind of a doubt, and that's the way real people are, you know. And I love that about your writing as well.
Well, thank you. Boy, you know, I should have you around a lot.
I'll
you
be
really
your
make
encourager
me feel
and cheerleader.
Good.
Yes. Well, it's been lovely having you on the show. And so Laughing Bear is on Amazon on ebook like Kindle, but also I did order a hard copy. I actually wanted to buy a hard copy, and I hope you get some of that so you can get an In-N-Out burger or anything you'd like. Is that where you tell people to go to get the book, is on Amazon mostly, or
well,
are there any other websites you want to mention?
Amazon.com is probably the easiest resource for most people. But if you want to get it more directly from the publisher, it's BearManorMedia.com. And that is nothing to do with the name of the Laughing Bear. It just happens to be that Bear Manor Media is the publisher. Yes.
That's,
and it's all one word, .com.
Yeah, Bear Manor, M-A-N-O-R, media.com. That's an interesting coincidence that it goes along with the title of your book. And now, how about for fans that want to keep up with you? Do you have any kind of Diane McBain site that you want to direct them to?
Well, I have a Facebook page. And, I don't know exactly how you get to that on the computer, because I'm not that knowledgeable. But Michael does a lot of the hard work when it comes to the Facebook page for me. So, but I do make comments now and again. I do say things now and again about how I feel and what I think. There's always a stream of photographs that Michael has dug up somewhere to show people from my career, which I'm always fascinated with the photographs that he comes up with. There's so many of them, and I've forgotten so many of them too. But in fact, recently there was one with Aaron Spelling and his wife.
I saw that.
And then I thought, now where is that? And then I realized it's exactly where I am now, which is at the Motion Picture Television Home. We were at a fundraiser, raising funds for this place where I now live.
Tippi Hedren and Aaron Spelling, the late Aaron Spelling and his wife.
That's right.
And that's a great picture of the four of you. I saw that. So if any of you want to see Diane on Facebook, we're friends, and put Diane McBain in the menu there, in the search menu, and she'll come up, and you'll see all kind of wonderful pictures there. And thank you, Michael, for finding these great pictures, and we look forward to having Michael on in the future with his book about Marlene Dietrich that's coming out. So The Laughing Bear is available on Amazon.com and BearManorMedia.com, and Diane's on Facebook, and the Motion Picture Home, I know where that is. I've visited friends that are there. And I've even been with people when they made their transition there. So I know that place very well. That's a wonderful place to be.
It is. It's terrific. And you'll have to come visit me sometime.
I'd love to meet you
in person.
Oh, yes, I'd love to, Diane. You, like many legends, live there. It's amazing how many legendary, and I'm sure you probably know, how many legendary people live there. Larry from the Three Stooges lived there, and he used to entertain and hold court, and Three Stooges fans would come up there and see him there. But a lot of people have lived there.
Mm-hmm.
I've wondered if I'll end up there.
Oh, well, it's a good place to be.
Yeah. And I'm glad that some funding came through. I remember there was some fundraisers that I got involved with because I can't remember the details, but there was something about the funding of the place there that was in jeopardy a little while back, but they were able to come through it okay.
It had to do with, the hospital, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because they had a hospital here at the time, and they were unable to keep the hospital, but they turned those buildings into special care units. So it's all very well used, and there's always ongoing fundraisers here, not now because of the coronavirus, and we're all, in quarantine, so to speak, on campus, so we can't have people here at the present moment. But as soon as that all stops, we will be able to start our fundraising again. And I'm sure there will be more events like that one that was in the photograph that I just mentioned. So anyway, it is a fabulous place to live. I'm really grateful that I managed to get my 20 years in of work in the industry to qualify to be here.
Yes, well, you certainly qualify. All my word, and IMDb, you have, I think, over 70 credits there. You were a hard-working gal in the studios, I'll tell you.
Yep, I was. So, Richard, thank you for having me on your show. I'm just
welcome. It's so kind of you invite me to see you as soon as it's able to there, or they lift the quarantine, or, I would love to come visit you. I appreciate you inviting me, and I want to invite all of you to get this book. The Laughing Bear, a novel by Diane McBain. Well, blessings to you, and I think this is going to be a great film. And I look forward to the second novel, too. What a premise you have about the young black woman is a caretaker for an old white man who turns out to be a white supremacist. Talk about a setup for a powerful human story. And again, that's another one of these great independent films. You two strong actors, and it, you can do it, you know?
Oh, yeah, I would think so. I hope so, anyway. Someday. So,
well, God bless you,
Diane.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing your novel.
Thank
you for sharing even about your past pain. That's an encouragement to others out there that have been through any kind of abuse or rape or anything like that to be able to talk about it, seek help, seek counseling. And thank you for this novel. Everyone, I want you to go get this novel, The Laughing Bear. It's now in paperback, hardback, and Kindle. God bless you, Diane.
Oh, the same to you, Richard. Thank you again. And you have my phone number, so call me when this is all over and we'll have lunch.
Oh, I would love that, Diane. We'll do that. Hopefully it'll calm down soon. And I'm in the valley, so I know exactly where you are. I've been invited quite a few times to visit with actors of yesteryear and cheer them up there. I play the guitar, and so I've even had requests to come there and play guitar, as I say, as some famous people were transitioning. I played guitar for them, so I know.
Yeah.
I love that place, and I'm glad you landed there. That's a wonderful place to be.
You know, your name sounds familiar. Have I seen you here?
You may have.
I've
been through there, and many of my friends have lived there. I make films, and one of my editors, Adam, his mother was there, and she passed. I was up there playing music for her in her final moments, and we had a funeral for her in Santa Monica. And an actress who also was involved with Batman was one of the speakers at the funeral for her. Lee Meriwether, who was Catwoman in the Batman film, was one of the speakers for her funeral. And I love it there.
Okay, good, good. Well, we'll see you then.
Okay, we'll see you then. Hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I hope so, definitely.
Okay, God bless you, Diane, and thanks again.
The same to you.
And
thank
give my
you.
Best to Mike, give my best to Michael, and I appreciate him helping facilitate this, Michael Michaud.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I love Michael. So take care, and hope to see you soon.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.